Welcome to North Shore News and Interviews on Amherst Island Radio. Each week, we keep you updated on newsworthy events, happenings, and conversations that we've had with people in the local community and beyond.
A new water pollution control plant upgrade and replacement project in Napanee is underway. Greater Napanee Council approved a contract with Peak Construction for nearly $75.5 million. The overall project cost is nearly $88 million, with $34.8 million in funding coming from the province and another $14 million from the federal government. Between that funding and the town's reserves, it leaves $25 million to be funded through loans. Staff noted a total of $5.5 million in contingencies, with $4 million of it built into tender pricing as an allowance for tariffs. Mayor Terry Richardson spoke about the scale of the project.
I know folks out there are going to say, oh, is $25 million affordable? But an affordable way of getting this municipality into the future. I've said it many times that, this is the largest investment we've made in this municipality in 170 years. And there are a lot of other municipalities I think would be wishing they were in the position that we are right now.
Richardson noted the importance of the funding they received.
Yes, $25 million is a lot of money to take a loan out on, but it is our future. We couldn't do it without the help of our partners, of our federal partners, and maybe more importantly, our provincial partners, who I couldn't imagine having this conversation if we didn't have the funding that we received to get us where we need to, because if $25 million scares you, $60 million should scare the bejumpins out of you.
General Manager of Growth and Infrastructure and Chief Building Official Michael Nobes explained why the project is needed.
We need this for the anticipated growth of the community. So we are anticipating a significant amount of both residential, commercial, and industrial growth within the urban settlement area, as well as modest growth within the rural area. So we are anticipating additional rural growth that would have the need for sewage disposal through septic tank disposal. So that is being planned for in the design and throughout the construction of the project.
Richardson noted how important the future of the town is, referencing all the work done in the past.
There can't be a Band-Aid left in this country because they put them all on this wastewater treatment plan to get us to where we are today. And there just isn't any left. It's worn out. It needs to be replaced. And again, it is our future. This is the future of our municipality right here. And I know it sounds really kind of strange and weird that we should be excited about a wastewater treatment plant, but we really should, because it's going to give us the future that we deserve in this municipality.
Nobes detailed the timeline for completion.
Through 2027, we would see the project continue, and midway through 2027 or towards the end of 2027 is when the commissioning of the plant would be undertaken, and through 2027, 2028 and onward, bringing the new facility up to full operation is the anticipated timeline.
Nobes spoke about the overall goals of the project and the expected location.
Replace aging infrastructure with new enhanced treatment to dramatically reduce partially treated wastewater during bypass events as a result of heavy flows entering the plant, and to provide further growth opportunities for the community through new development. The new plant would be located immediately west of the existing site and consists of new headworks, new activated granular sludge tanks, tertiary treatment UV disinfection, and an operations and control building. Ultimately, we're looking to increase the hydraulic capacity of the plant, eliminate bypassing during peak wet weather events, and to comply with the Bay Oquinnie Remedial Action Plan to reduce, provide for a better effluent leaving the plant.
Staff will also be working on modernizing processes to simplify operations, improve energy efficiency, and decrease life cycle costs. The report noted the existing plant location will become available for future expansion projects when required. Nobes detailed the type of growth the new plant could support.
This new plant would provide for the capacity up to an anticipated and approximate 4,000 new homes, in addition to a mix of commercial and industrial growth. And as we see this new development proceed, the assessment growth of the municipality will ultimately grow, which helps to provide additional operating and capital revenues for the municipality for future planning. We have nearly 1,600 dwelling units approved that are either in the construction stage or are considered shovel ready. So draft plan approved, site plan approved, final plan of subdivision approved. And these units were highlighted in our funding application to the province, which helped get us the amount of funding that we ultimately did from the province. Of the 1600 units that are approved per se, we would be looking at 16 years of build out for those.
Only pre-qualified general contractors were able to view the tender and submit a bid. For a compliant submission, the report stated all pre-qualified general contractors had to partner with pre-qualified electrical and mechanical contractors. Director of Environmental Services Christy Kelly explained the bids they received and noted who Peak Construction will be working with.
4 out of 5 of the GCs submitted bids, and all 4 were compliant. In addition to the general contractor work, Peak will utilize internal resources for the mechanical work and will be working with Sheridan Electric as their electrical contractor.
Kelly spoke about contingencies built in and noted U.S. tariffs as a main cause.
There's $4 million here that is set aside for tariffs. We all know there's some uncertainties with the way things are right now, and a lot of that pre-selected equipment is being purchased from this, the United States, so we've allowed that contingency allowance in there for such a thing.
Nobes explained staff's intentions with the contingencies.
The intent is not to use these contingencies at all, but we did want to set out a plan for council's awareness and for the community that really was as conservative as possible to take into account potential unknowns at this point.
Kelly explains why they couldn't choose Canadian options or options from other countries besides the United States.
The pre-selected equipment, including the AGS tanks specifically and or the activated granular sludge process is a United States-based process. So that was purchased, again, before the talks of these tariffs. We had to pre-select these pieces of equipment. We've certainly are working to do our best to ensure that, as I'm sure much of our country is, to purchase locally as much as possible, but a lot of these items were unfortunately only available from the United States.
Nobe speaks about the expected lifetime for the new plant, touching on upgrades in the distant future, and mentioning the history of the current plant as well.
The existing plant, it was built in 1953. It's still in operation today. The actual use of it, 50 plus years, is anticipated. Routine maintenance will always be required. But we would be talking a 50 plus year design of the building. When the capacity of the plant is reached, per se, ultimately would depend on the rate at which the municipality builds out over time. So it would ultimately depend on how quickly the building permits are being pulled and homes are ultimately being built. If it's, I'd say it's worth looking back over the last few years, we're looking at in the range of 100-ish units per year, ballpark.
Nobes talks about the potential of future upgrades.
It is very straightforward to add additional cells. Adding additional cells onto the site is not going to be a challenge. It would be a matter of doing additions to the existing footprint. So it's not like we would be looking at all a brand new $80 million project again in the future. It would be a much more modest amount to add additional capacity, more or less additions onto those portions of the structure, as a lot of the headworks, the UV treatment and other buildings on the site would be able to function with these additions onto those cells.
Nobes speaks about the $34.8 million they received from the provincial government and explains the $14 million they got in 2020 from the federal government.
That was through the Canada Infrastructure Program for Ontario's allocation to the rural and northern communities infrastructure stream. We were successful with working with our local MP on getting our name pulled up the list to get that funding. And last year, we were successful in receiving provincial funding, just under $35 million. And with that, it is certainly making the project feasible. Without these contributions, we would not be in a financial state to be able to undertake this significant infrastructure project fully on our own.
Nobes highlighted staff's appearances at Roma conferences as a reason they received the funding.
I recall being with council at Roma delegations and discussions with ministers prior to submitting those applications. And I think those really helped to bring our application up in the queue in the eyes of the province. And I think it really helped get us to this point and have a good outcome with those funding applications.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. The Sunday Market in Bath is looking to kick off another season in Centennial Park with a new look this year. Market manager Tara Williamson has undertaken a market revitalization and says it's well underway. Williamson noted the focus of supporting and engaging with local farmers.
I think something that's like different for this market this year than from previous years is we have a big focus on farmers. So we have a lot more farm vendors, so people can come and get their local produce, their local maple syrup, flowers. So lots of farmers at this market now.
Williamson explains her background and experience running the Frontenac Farmers Market.
My background is actually in business development. I scale up businesses, usually in the tech space, but just sort of anywhere I can fit in. And then so when Frontenac was struggling, I volunteered my expertise to that market and spearheaded a revitalization of that market in 2022. And that market's rocking now. So a lot of time that was spent on that market previously, I don't need to spend on it because it sort of does its own thing now. So I jumped on board with Bath and I'm going to repeat the same process there that we did in Frontenac.
Williamson highlighted different weekly events that'll take place at the market.
There'll be lots of weekly events. So it like live music will happen at least once a month, but maybe more frequently. We have kids craft days, which are really fun. Some workshops that the various vendors are putting on. We're going to have the local fire department come out one of the weeks and maybe do the touch the truck event there. So, yeah, we're working within the community to have special events as well as have our vendors, host different things themselves.
There will be over 35 different vendors with on-site food and drink every week. The Bath Sunday Market runs every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Centennial Park from May 11th to October 26th. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. As one of the 169 Ontario municipalities to be receiving strong mayor powers, Greater Napanee Council discussed what that will mean for the town. The province announced April 9th that it intends to introduce legislation to expand strong mayor powers to 169 municipalities. The province originally introduced strong mayor powers in 2022 for the cities of Ottawa and Toronto. Through 2023, 44 additional municipalities received these powers. Effective May 1st, 216 of Ontario's 414 single and lower-tier municipalities would have this legislation apply to them. Manager of Legislative Services and Municipal Clerk Jessica Walters explains the intended goal of the legislation.
They have indicated this expansion is being made to single and lower-tier municipalities with councils with seven or more members, and that this is being done with a goal to expand housing in Ontario. This is a big thing for us and for a lot of other municipalities. We assume to be introduced next week in order to go into effect on May 1st. So there are still a few unknowns. And if anything changes, once we see the text of that bill, we will let council know as soon as possible.
Walters detailed staff's plans going forward.
The discussions that, again, we've only had this for a couple of weeks, so it's a little preliminary in our discussions. But I believe the intent of the mayor and of staff is to, as quickly as possible after this May 1 deadline, establish what our normal is going to look like, create that predictability that we've been trying to have as an organization to create routines and establish processes of this is how we as a municipality define how these powers are going to be used. So our goal is to define as much of that quickly with this term of council, establish what normal looks like, bake as much of it into bylaws and policies as we can. Could a new mayor overturn all of that day one, November 16th, 2026? Maybe. We don't know. Nobody's been in that situation yet to know.
Walters noted what they saw as the largest change.
The mayor has to introduce the budget by February 1, after which council has 30 days to vote on amendments to the budget. We do anticipate this to be our largest operational change, and we'll be working to update our public consultation practices to account for this new timeframe.
Walters noted changes that could affect staffing.
The mayor can give direction to members of staff, so this will require an amendment to our council staff relations policy, which currently states that council direction is given by way of resolution, policy, and bylaw. The mayor has the sole authority to appoint and dismiss the CAO, unless the mayor chooses to delegate this power back to council. The mayor has the sole authority to appoint and dismiss department heads that are non-statutory positions, i.e. not your clerk, treasurer, fire chief, chief building official, as the legislation says those must be appointed by council, unless the mayor chooses to delegate this back to council or to the CAO. Currently, our bylaw states that council has hiring and firing authority for general managers and statutory positions, and the CAO has authority to manage staffing below that level.
Walters noted how it could change procedure with bylaws and at council meetings.
The mayor can propose a bylaw to support a provincial priority. Currently, this is defined as building new homes and infrastructure to support those homes. If the mayor introduces the bylaw, it only needs 3 out of 7 instead of 4 out of 7 votes to pass, and the mayor counts as one of those votes. The mayor can veto a bylaw if he believes it interferes with a provincial priority. This can either be announced in advance or up to 2 business days after the bylaw is passed. So we'll need to amend our procedure bylaw to account for how that's going to work in practice. The mayor can introduce an item of business at a council meeting and require council to vote on the matter at that meeting, i.e. can't be deferred or request an additional staff report if it advances a provincial priority. So we'll need to amend our procedure bylaw to define how that's going to work.
Walters spoke about the limitations in power as well.
These powers are not absolute. There are additional requirements and limitations on how they're used. So as noted, some of these can be delegated back to council or the CAO. If a power can't be delegated, council can still override it with a 2/3 majority within certain set time limits. Any use of these powers must be made in writing, and typically a justification for how this relates to a provincial priority needs to be attached. The mayor can't use any of these powers if they have a conflict of interest as defined in the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act for the matter under consideration. And these powers can't be used to waive any public notice and public consultation requirements. So, for example, your planning applications, you would still have to have your published notice, your public hearing, your public meeting. You'd still have to go through all of those steps. This couldn't be used to skip any of those steps.
Mayor Terry Richardson weighed in on the situation and noted the changes they'll have to make across the different departments.
This isn't a very easy topic to talk about, especially when you have a group of people sitting around a horseshoe that get along as well as we do. But yes, we do disagree with things. Sometimes we get mad at each other, but by the end of the night, you know what? We're all able to go for something to eat and life is grand. It's going to be some interesting times. There's going to be some work for Madam Clerk because we now have to adjust procedures, adjust policies, adjust bylaws, add documents onto agendas that have to be signed within 2 or 3 days. So bear with us. We'll wait and see what comes out in the next week or so, and we'll move forward from that.
Councillor Mike Shank voiced his concerns with the strong mayor powers.
We're elected free democracy. We can agree to disagree, but I have grave concerns, not with this council, but when we're gone, that if you have a mayor that comes in and he doesn't believe in free speech of listen to every member of council over the time, and the pressure he does on the staff and the turmoil that he's done with the staff, it can wreck the whole municipality, because any of the good staff is just going to say, see you later, we're out of here. I don't want to see all the work that we've done and the staff that we have lose it. You get a real wrong council and it can destroy a municipality really quick.
Walters noted staff's uncertainty of whether or not they could opt out of receiving the strong mayor powers.
The first round, when it was just Ottawa and Toronto, was not optional. The second round was optional because you had to sign a housing pledge to opt in to receive the powers, and some municipalities chose not to. We have not heard anything about a housing pledge or any opting in or out this time around, so we don't know. Some municipalities have passed motions saying we don't want these powers. We don't know if that is going to have any impact on the bill that gets introduced next week.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Loyalist Township Council granted Hot to Trot Stables a noise exemption for a total of 57 days between the months of April and September. The company will be using some of those days to run shows and events. Owner of Hot to Trot Stables, Megan Desjardins, noted their focus this year towards accommodating neighbors' concerns.
We kind of changed it this year to accommodate our neighbors by going to a Wednesday night jackpot, which would be 2 to 3 hours, and only having 2 weekends this year to accommodate the Friday, Saturday, or the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the Barrel Bash. So this is a little bit more accommodating our neighbors for the sound and allowing them to have our weekends.
Desjardins explained the need for including 57 days on their application for exemption.
We did put in a lot of dates, and then we narrowed it down to the dates that we would like to go forward with as a possibility. The dates are rain dates. They're not every date was going to be a show.
A neighbor who shares a fence with the property, Mary Jo Muir, shared her support for the event.
Last year, we had quite the argument about whether this should happen or not. I can tell you that Ms. Desjardins kept her promise. The noise was kept to a reasonable level. It went from intolerable to a little bit annoying. So a little bit annoying is life in the country. And I'm very impressed with the work she's done. So I looked at all of the dates that she has in mind. Almost all of them are Wednesday evenings from 5 till 9 p.m., which is well within reason. So I can't say that I speak for all of the neighbors, but I can say for myself, I share a fence line with Megan. She's been a great neighbor this year, and I'm very much in support of what she's doing.
Desjardins spoke about the progress they've made towards hosting the event this year.
I didn't receive any complaints, and everything panned out for our decimal readings. And I think that we showed that we were capable of accommodating the show and neighbors at hand.
Councillor Mike Buderick noted the changes since last year and showed his support for the event.
It was a little contentious last year, and there was no pushback. And the fact that a neighbor came in and spoke this evening to say things had improved is a good move forward. And the fact that the applicant respected their neighbors, and it sounds great. So I'm happy to see progress.
Councillor Carol Park showed her support for accommodating neighbors.
I think it's great that the owners have taken the initiative to make sure that the neighbors are taken care of and their concerns that they had.
Hot to Trot Stables hosts horse shows and events at 1003 Lucas Road in Odessa. They've specified that during these events, riders' names and orders will be announced over the speakers, along with playing music throughout the event. Staff noted the events attract people from all over Eastern Ontario and Quebec who also access businesses within the township while attending. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Napanee's Arts Advisory Committee is taking over Music by the River, a live music series in Napanee. The committee noted they'll be scaling back to just 2 performances throughout 2025. Councillor and member of the Arts Advisory Committee, Bob Norrie, explained the role the committee is taking in running the event. He noted that through other venues that wouldn't affect their budget, there would be more than 2 performances.
We scaled it right back, or the thinking of it, to just twice, once in July, once in August, 2 entertainers each time. I've spoken to the sound person. He's charging the same as last year. He's been very fair. And we're looking for local talent. So we've scaled it back to just what we think is good. And we're working closely with Michelle Hauser for other venues. So there will be music down there more than just twice, but that's what the group has come to.
The committee has partnered with a company called Harmony to look after sponsorship for the event. Norrie noted the company is responsible for lining up the sponsorships while the committee pays the artists. Norrie mentioned the committee's small budget and a study they did last year to monitor attendance.
We just have a small budget with a limited budget for advertising as well. We did a study of how many people came last year. Appreciate those that come, but and the amount of people it takes to set up, and you need some of us there. So we just decided we're going to try it twice this year and then piggyback with what happens with Harmony.
CAO Matthew Grant explained how the committee's budget works.
As part of this effort, they are looking to expend a portion of their budget, as yet undisclosed, towards that effort. They do have $5,000 that has been budgeted through the town's municipal budget process. Should there be a desire for any further support from the town, that would come in the form of a recommendation from the committee to council for approval, such as staff time or other resources.
Councillors Angela Hicks and Dave Pinnell showed their support for live music in the area.
People can come by boat and sit and listen to the music.
I just think that any time that we can promote anything around our river, that natural beauty we have in this town. We have to utilize that much more than what we are, and I think we're on the right way. Come on in by boat, tie up and listen to it, and it's just great. So anytime that I can help promote that, I'm all for it.
Councillor Mike Shank was hopeful the event would be able to expand again in the future, noting public input.
I fully support what Bob and the Arts Committee, our advisory committee, is doing. I live so close, I'm right on the water along Highway 33 in Loyalist. They have in bed a bath every weekend. They have, and it's very well attended there. So if it's very well attended here and it's a takeoff here, we can increase those dates. You know what I mean? Because I've had some phone calls where the same jumps, you know, well, why is there only two? Why can't there be five? Well, the committee is the one. I'm not part of that committee. I let the committee go through its process and go from there.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News.
This has been North Shore News and Interviews. If you have an idea for a story or want to create stories for this show, consider joining our 100% volunteer team. Contact Amherst Island Radio for more details.